The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in Board of Regents against Tamayo. Reserve. I think you may proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. This case here on certiorari raises really four issues. First being whether the District Court erred in giving declaratory judgment that the Board of Regents had violated Mary Tamayo's civil rights by not giving her a hearing. The second being the extent to which the District Court and Circuit Court of Appeals should have been bound by the New York State Court's interpretation of state law, and the other two being a unique interpretation of the Second Circuit Court of Appeals with respect to the defenses of res judicata and the statute of limitations. Since this is a due process case, I think it is important to start with a brief outline of the essential facts to which that due process has got to be applied. Mary Tamayo practiced chiropractic in the state of New York for a few years before the first chiropractic licensing statute was enacted, effective in July 1963. When that statute came into effect, it provided a special means of qualification for what were called grandfather applicants, which was intended to take into account the fact that they had been out of school for a while and that they had been acquiring valuable experience through actual practice. A limited series of four special examinations was provided for the grandfather applicants. At the time, a class action was brought contesting the constitutionality of the licensing statute. Wasmuth v. Allen, cited in our brief, the New York Court of Appeals sustained the statute and an appeal to this court was dismissed. Subsequently, the four examinations originally contemplated were extended to five and then to six special examinations. Mrs. Tamayo had made her application in the normal course of events for licensure, was admitted to the series of special examinations, took and failed all six of them. As a result of retaining credit for subjects passed on previous exams, and as a result of grade averaging within a group of subjects, her final margin of failure on the sixth and last examination was 0.6 of 1 point. At this point, it is our contention that she had failed to qualify under a valid and constitutional licensing scheme. And at this point, if there were no more New York statutes involved, the Circuit Court would have agreed that her previous right to practice chiropractic had expired by the result of her failure on the examinations. However, in New York, we have an article of omnibus provisions which apply to all of the 30 professions licensed by the Board of Regents. These are in addition to the special provisions set forth in a separate article for each of the professions. One of the omnibus provisions, which has been in effect for many years, provides that the Board of Regents may waive a specific licensing requirement if they are satisfied that it has been substantially met. After failing the examination route under the chiropractic article, Mrs. Tamayo applied for a waiver of her failure on the examinations. This was denied by the department. And that was in November of 1971. She subsequently instituted a state court action contending that the denial was arbitrary and capricious and that the statute required the regents to consider her failure on her narrow margin of failure on the examination and her licensure in two other states. The Supreme Court of the State of New York at special term granted judgment from the bench for Mrs. Tamanio. No decision was written. The Board of Regents appealed, and that judgment was unanimously reversed by the Appellate Division. An appeal to the Court of Appeals was unanimously dismissed, so that all of the, I believe, 11 appellate judges in the State of New York dismissed her action. So then, in June of 1976, she initiated an action in the district court in which she requested a mandatory order directing licensure, an injunction against interference with her right to practice, and a declaration that her civil rights had been violated. The first two elements of relief, the real relief which she requested, namely licensure and the right to practice, were identical to those which had been raised in the state case. There had been no mention of Section 1983 or federal civil rights in the prior state court actions. The federal district court denied the request for licensure, denied the request for an injunction against interference with her practice, but did give judgment that the Board of Regents had violated her civil rights through the failure to offer her a hearing on her application for waiver of the examination failures and in failing to give her the reasons for the denial of her application. Petitioners appealed from that decision. No cross appeal was filed, and the licensure and practice issues are therefore not before the court.
Mr. Meserve,
yes.
I noticed that in your brief, you rely on the full faith and credit statute enacted by Congress, 28 U.S.C. 1738, saying that full faith and credit to judges. And I didn't see any treatment of that issue in the majority opinion of the Court of Appeals. I realize it was mentioned in Judge Lombard's dissent. Did you raise it in the Court of Appeals?
In substance, but not by name, Your Honor. I did not refer to that section. I did argue that the state courts had resolved that issue.
And did you argue that the broad New York rule of the estoppel by judgment, that anything that was litigated or might have been litigated is barred in a subsequent New York proceeding?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
Well, my understanding of the New York rule of collateral estoppel is that anything that was litigated or might have been litigated is barred in a subsequent lawsuit.
Yes, we did make that argument. With respect to the question of due process, this was first raised, of course, in the federal action 4 years after the final determination. In the letter of November 1971 notifying Mrs. Tamanio of the denial of her waiver application, and incidentally notifying her that she was admitted to the regular licensing examination, she was informed that if she had any questions, she could contact the executive secretary. The letter did not go on at that time to give written reasons for the denial of the application. However, 3 months later, in February 1972, in our first response to the state court litigation, those reasons were given in writing and in full. Therefore, she had notice of the reasons for the denial of her application in writing over 4 years before the institution of this federal action. And I would submit that that issue really is and was academic for 4 years before the case began. Furthermore, this is not a type of a case where the Board of Regents was doing something to Mary Tamanio, but a case where she had failed to qualify under the statute regulating her profession, and none applied, arguing that she had the substantial equivalent of the statutory requirements. That application was judged solely on the basis of the material which she submitted and which was accepted at face value. She knew the basis of her argument, and she was represented by an attorney from the beginning of the application to the department, I believe. And there is really no question that she has had reasons for denial of her application from the beginning in this case. With respect to the hearing, the federal district court judge and the majority of the circuit court held that she should have been given a formal hearing on her application for waiver. Now, there is no statutory provision for such. No hearing was requested by her at any time, although she was represented by an attorney throughout. And this court, as a matter of fact, had not yet decided Roth and Sinderman. So we are being hit with a bit of a lack of anticipation of the decisions of this court when you put this into the perspective of 1971 when the decision was made. Secondly, any right to practice which she may have had been terminated, in our opinion, by her failure to qualify by passing one of the series of special examinations. She had no reasonable expectation, much less a mutual expectation, that the state would waive a requirement if she proved unable to meet it. And I don't think that the subsequent application under those circumstances continued a right, or should be construed as having reinstated the right, really, for purposes of considering the due process to which she was entitled on the second application. I think the court below erred in lumping the original licensing application and the waiver application together. We would also argue that she had, in effect, due process. As I said before, she was represented by an attorney in the waiver application. She had a full opportunity to present her arguments in writing, and she did so. And they were simply that she had almost passed, she was licensed in two other states with standards which we did not regard as equivalent, and she had passed a private licensing examination which the state also did not accept as equivalent. She was given eventually the reasons for denial, and she had a fully adequate record for judicial review, which is proven by the fact that it was in fact reviewed, and the state courts found that she did not have the substantial equivalent.
Well, is she now asking for a hearing to give the reasons for denial, or is she asking for a hearing to give the reasons for failure to give her a waiver?
I think she is now belatedly asking that we give her a hearing on her 1971 application and start all over again, followed, I suspect, by three more state courts and three more federal courts.
Well, what did the federal court order? A hearing on what subject?
The district court gave decision merely said that we should have given her a hearing.
On what?
On her application for a waiver. On her argument that she had the substantial equivalent of the New York requirements.
Isn't that the whole focus, or is it more than that?
I think it's more than that.
Did the Court of Appeals expand what the district court ordered?
No, the Court of Appeals in the Appellate Division decided that, this was argued before them, there's no question about this, that the evidence that she had submitted on her application was not the substantial equivalent. And also, Your Honor, that the statute under which she applied did not apply to this type of an application.
And the counsel never asked for a hearing.
Never.
She never did ask for a hearing.
No. In fact, the argument made in the petition to the district...
Is it true that it wouldn't have been granted if it had been asked for?
I don't know that that's true, Your Honor.
You don't know that's true.
The argument made in the complaint in the district court was not that she wanted a hearing, but that because she had never been given a hearing, the district court should give her a license. Now, we believe the court below erred in ignoring the New York interpretation of its own statute. Section 6506 of the Education Law, this substantial equivalent section, is, as I said before, an omnibus provision which has been on the books for many years. It has never been applied by the Board of Regents or by the New York courts to an application for a waiver of a provision which has been failed, of an examination which has been failed. It is a necessary type of a statute authorizing waiver of experience or examination or preliminary education requirements for candidates who have the substantial equivalent of the New York rule, but, as it is applied, to candidates who have acquired their education or taken their examination in some jurisdiction where it differs from that given in New York, but is substantially equivalent thereto. And there is nothing in the record in this case, in either the state or federal courts, indicating that New York has ever applied this statute to the type of a situation we have here. We contend it was never intended to be, it never should have been, and we contend that the majority in the circuit court erred in ignoring that New York interpretation of its own statutes.
You contend, in effect, that there was no state interest which she had under New York law that would have warranted a hearing as to whether she should be granted it or not.
No, we contend that the statute was never intended to apply to this, but beyond that, we would say she certainly, the best she had was a mere hope.
Of a waiver.
Of a waiver.
And you say the New York courts have construed the statute relating to waivers so as not to apply to this type of situation?
Never been applied to this type of a situation. It used to be that the statute explicitly referred to foreign applicants. There was a general recodification in 1971 of all of the New York statutes relating to professional licensing. And the present provision no longer contains an implicit restriction to out-of-state applicants. But the interpretation placed upon it by the department and by the Appellate Division and the Court of Appeals in this case is the same as the interpretation placed upon the former section. And in fact, the Court of Appeals decision in the state, in Mrs. Tamanio's state court action, cited Matter of Erlanger, which was the leading New York case under the former statute, and which set forth at great length the concept that this was an extraordinary provision, not to be applied lightly.
Well, are there any, have the New York courts ever subjected a waiver decision to review?
Yes, we have had a number of cases in New York involving applications for waiver. Not waiver of an examination that has been failed. That has not even been tried.
Would the board have had power to waive in this case?
No. The decision of the Appellate Division in the New York courts held in ringing language, and it's cited in the dissenting opinion from the circuit court, And it states in ringing language that it would have been arbitrary and an abuse of discretion for the Board of Regents to have granted this request.
Well, that may be so, but that implies that there are circumstances in which a waiver in these circumstances might not be arbitrary.
I couldn't agree on the in these circumstances. There are other circumstances that are appropriate for a waiver, many
well,
of them.
Are there any standards on which supplied by the statute on which waiver is to be granted?
Not in the statute, no.
Well, is that?
The Court of Appeals, the Appellate Division said, and the Court of Appeals affirmed, that you cannot waive an examination that has been failed.
Well, has the Board ever, in any circumstances, ordered the Board to give a waiver that the Board refused?
I can't recall one offhand, but I suspect that they probably have. We have a fair volume of litigation in professional licensing cases, none, however, relating to an examination requirement.
Well, because it's held that the statute simply
doesn't apply. It was not intended as an end run whereby somebody who can't pass an examination can get around it.
It doesn't sound like the Court of Appeals majority agreed with that interpretation of the New York law, does it?
I think they did.
The Court of Appeals here?
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Federal.
I'm thinking of the New York Court of Appeals.
No, it's federal court.
Oh, no. They ignored it.
Well, let me read you.
And this is my argument.
I've tried to get at this before.
Yes.
Here's the Court of Appeals majority opinion. The adjudicative fact to be determined in considering whether to grant a waiver is, and I'm omitting some, whether, notwithstanding her narrow failure of the examination, she substantially meets the licensure requirements. That's the narrow question. It hasn't anything to do with the six failures. It has to do only with whether she should have had a hearing on whether there should have been a waiver. He went on to say, the opinion goes on to say, of course, the state legislature need not have provided for any waiver of the examination, but once it did so, denial of the waiver implicates procedural due process. Now,
well, Mr. Chief Justice,
we have to decide whether that's a correct statement.
No, my argument is that that is not a correct statement because the New York State Court Legislature did not provide for a waiver of an examination that has been failed.
Where did that originate? Where does the waiver come from the licensing board?
The waiver statute is general. It can apply to any profession. It can apply to any requirement. It says the Board of Regents may waive a requirement if, in their judgment, it has been substantially met.
As a matter of New York law, I take it, we're bound by the way the New York courts have interpreted that particular statute as to when a waiver may be given and when it may not be given.
Right. In practice, and in the courts, and in practice in the administrative body, it has never been applied, and the New York courts, I think, have held fairly that it was never intended to be applied.
I understood you a moment ago to say that in this very case, in ringing language, some New York courts said that there was no waiver available in these circumstances.
They said that it would have been an abuse of discretion.
Is that in this case?
Yes, that is in this case.
Could you
quoted by Justice Lombard in the dissenting.
Well, I know, but is it in the Appellate Division opinion?
It's the Appellate Division of the New York State Courts in her state court action.
Well, we have that in the petition for certiorari, do you not?
Yes, you have it in the appendix to it.
Yes, page D1. Now, where in that opinion does that appear?
What are you in, Your Honor?
Petition for certiorari. Page
well, what have you got in your hand? You've got the record?
I have
got the appendix. Is it in there?
Yes, A5.
A5.
Well, look at the D3. Have the
requirements on the record here, it would have abdicated its delegated.
That is the language I have in mind.
Where is that?
D3.
In the petition.
In the petition for cert.
Now, that, how do you read that as a, is that a state law construction?
Yes, I read that as a construction by the New York appellate courts that the Section 6506 under which a waiver application was made could not be applied to this situation. I read it as saying that as a matter of law.
State law.
State law. The application had to be
and
denied.
Then what did the Court of Appeals do? Deny appeal?
Affirmed.
Well, they affirmed?
Yes. The appellate division decision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that they affirmed that part of the appellate division?
Yes.
You mean the New York Court of Appeals?
The New York Court of Appeals.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I understand.
I apologize.
And you suggest that the Court of Appeals, the Federal Court of Appeals, just ignored that?
Yes. They looked at the language of the statute and nothing more, and held that a hearing should have been required. I think this is
the United States Court of Appeals has said this violates federal due process, if I read their opinion correctly. Do you read it that way?
Yes.
And that's the issue before us. That's the only issue before us, isn't it?
No, it's not the only issue, Mr. Chief Judge, but it is one of the issues, certainly.
If they're wrong on that, you prevail, don't you?
I hope so.
There's also the issue of whether the New York Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit should have permitted this matter to be relitigated at all after she had had her Chapter 78 proceeding in the New York courts.
Yes, I do not have the time. I want to reserve a few moments, and I'm almost out of time. I would have to say that I have briefed the point of the unique Second Circuit rules on the statute of limitations in re judicata, and I think that as they have been applied in this case, they do not do substantial, they are not in the sound interest of the administration of justice, because they encourage an administrative determination followed by three cases in the state courts, followed by three federal courts, and prolong what should be a fairly straightforward determination through 9 years of litigation. I would like to reserve the remainder.
One question. How do you raise the problem that my examination was erroneously graded?
That was never alleged.
No, I said, how would you raise that?
You could raise that in...
But it could be raised?
Could be raised, that's absolutely. Article 78 proceeding in state courts or federal action.
It could be raised.
Yes.
Mr. Mutari.
Mr. Chief Justice. And
if the court were to decide that this was res judicata, that would be the end of the case, if this court were to decide.
Yes, it would, Your Honor. I would like to just step into one part of the recitation of the facts, which I think can clear up what appears to me to be some sort of a double kind of entendre we're getting here. In the state court, we argued a state issue. In the federal court, we're arguing a federal issue. In 1971, when the legislature in its wisdom chose to pass a law called 6506, which was a revision of a law that was on the books since 1939, they gave an opportunity to all the citizens of the state of New York to go to the regents and request of them a waiver of their background requirements for a license, of their education requirements for a license, and for their examination requirements, in whole or in part. Previous to this law, they had 211, in which the legislature in the state of New York, in its wisdom, said that only outsiders, people who have been practicing for 5 years in a given profession, may come to the state of New York and show the Board of Regents that 5 years of practice and what came before it would be sufficient to warrant an acceptance by the Board of Regents that they substantially complied. When 6506 came around, it was on the books for 5 weeks before Mary Tamayo took advantage of it. It was the first time it was on the books. They opened now this application for showing whether they substantially complied or not to citizens of the state of New York and to people for the first time who failed examinations, and it's quoted here in clear English. Now, that decision of the Board of Regents was an adjudicative decision. And the process that Mary Camaglio used, going up through the state court, was one to determine if that adjudicative decision was arbitrary or capricious.
She could have raised her constitutional claims.
Yes, she could. And the federal res judicata doctrine, which is being formulated by the Second Circuit, said, has even enlarged the federal res judicata concept in the New York State res judicata concept. New York federal court said in Monroe versus Pate Supreme Court that you don't have to go down to the state court first before you bring your due process or your civil rights action in the federal court.
Well, but isn't the Second Circuit bound by the Act of Congress of 1790, 28 U.S.C. 1730?
In fact, they're supporting the Act of Congress. The Act of Congress, when they instituted the Civil Rights Act, for one simple reason, they were concerned that some states might not be able to give some people their rights.
I'm talking about the Act of 1790, the third section, which says, with respect to proceedings in state courts, such acts, records, and judicial proceedings shall have the same full faith and credit in every court within the United States and its territories and possessions as they have by law or usage in the courts of such state or possession.
The state res judicata is broader than that in the state of New York.
Well, then, doesn't this statute require the Second Circuit to observe state the New York rule?
And the New York rule for res judicata is that, say, Mary Camaglio may not bring her due process case, an entirely different case, a constitutional case, in the federal court, if she didn't bring it in the state court, provided that the cause of actions were the same. And they quote Winters versus
Levine,
and misquote it by leaving out that last sentence, provided that the cause of action is the same. And we contend that the cause of action was not the same. We had apples in the state court. We had oranges in the federal court. We had a woman saying that when you were given this broad adjudicative power, Mr. Regents, you didn't use it wisely. You were arbitrary and capricious. And it was held by special term that they were arbitrary and capricious, and then appealed. And then the appeal affirmed in the Court of Appeals. And when we came to the federal court, we said, Mr. Judge Foley, what happened? They came down with this decision, but the way they arrived at it was in an unconstitutional manner. Whether it was an arbitrary decision or not an arbitrary decision, the way they arrived at it was unconstitutional.
You didn't appeal this to the federal district court.
No, we went to the new
court. The state court proceeding was over when you went to the district court.
Yes, it was, sir.
Well, and isn't the New York rule that not only anything you actually litigated in that proceeding, but anything that might have been litigated cannot be relitigated?
No, it is not the New York rule. There's a further sentence that says, provided that there's the same cause of action through both litigations. And we contend that there was not the same cause of action.
So, when the Court of Appeals ruled, you could have come here, couldn't you?
Directly to the Supreme Court?
Yes, sir.
We went to the district court.
I said you could have come to this court, Honor. So instead of that, you appealed to the district court.
Yes.
No, you couldn't have come here. You raised no federal question, I understood, in the state proceeding.
We brought no federal question in the state court.
Well,
how could you come in?
Well, I was thinking that maybe we could have committed on some kind of an injunction proceeding or something like that against the lower court. But we tried that already because they arrested Mary Camaglio one time along the line, and we tried it and couldn't get an injunction.
I am not clear on the facts yet. When did you ask for a hearing?
We asked for the hearing in 1971.
Where?
Where the Board of Regents of the City of New York. We asked the Board of Regents for a hearing.
You did? Where is that in the record? Is that in the record?
Yes, and it will be admitted to by... we asked them for a hearing. We wrote them a letter and asked them for a waiver, not a hearing. I'm awfully sorry.
So you never did ask?
We never asked for a hearing, and the Supreme Court has said that there is no need to ask that a waiver, a hearing may be given even although it's not asked for under certain circumstances.
But does it have to be given?
It does not have to be given.
Well, why should it be given in this case?
We think the circumstances are so extreme here that it should be given.
What's extreme? She failed 7 times?
The extreme is that she's been practicing chiropractic since 1958 without a blemish. This is her livelihood, her only source of living.
She failed 7 times.
Our contention is that if she failed 107 times and she passed or closely passed the 108th time, we're talking about the one time that she failed just by 0.6%. This is the reasonableness for which we go and ask for our decision.
Would your position be the same if she failed by 5 points?
I don't think it could be. Though if we put together that she passed 2 other state examinations, that she passed the National Chiropractic Board of Examiners exam, which I understand the state of New York now uses as a model, that she practiced without a blemish since 1958 without any mark against her, if we had been granted a hearing, though we did not ask for a hearing, we could have attempted to prove to that Board of Regents these facts by, say, bringing in her peer group as to her competency.
Weren't you there? Wasn't the lawyer present?
Yes, I was there, sir.
Well, did you offer to put on evidence?
We asked them for a waiver as the law required. They said no.
Did you offer to put on witnesses?
No, we didn't, because the law did not require us to.
If you had given a hearing, what would you have done?
If we were given a hearing, I believe that we could have brought forward her peer group, eminent people qualified in chiropractic.
Why didn't you bring them?
We were never given a hearing to bring them.
Well, did they tell you you couldn't bring them?
They just said no.
They said no to you?
They said no to me, and I said they were arbitrary and capricious.
I thought they listened to you. Did they cut you off? Did you say everything you wanted to say?
I put most of this in a letter to them when I asked them for the waiver.
Now, I'm talking about when you were there.
I was never there. They never let you be there. You write to them.
You were never present?
In the Regent's home office, no.
But you never wrote, did you submit affidavits?
I submitted our arguments.
You submitted oral arguments?
Written arguments in a letter saying we would like a waiver that we feel we come under 6506 subdivision 5.
Did you offer to submit the affidavits of these people you were talking about?
No, I did not.
Were you denied that right?
No, I was not denied the right. We had a no in about 48 hours. And the only logical path I felt what we could take at that time was to go to the Supreme Court and say they were arbitrary and capricious, that this decision was without foundation.
Mr. Mutare, your theory of there being arbitrary and capricious, as I understand it, was that given the facts that she'd almost passed the exam and her history of practice that it was arbitrary and capricious, given those facts, to deny her the right to practice.
That's right, Your Honor.
So didn't you have before them substantially everything you would have put in if you had had a hearing?
I think the reason we hold hearings here in the United States Supreme Court and in other courts, or we'd all be mailing letters to each other. I did give it to them in the form of a writing. But if you have an opportunity to come in, though I didn't ask for it, and bring in witnesses who could or could not impress the jury or the set of judges that were there, bring in her patients who could attest to her professionalism and caring.
How do you respond to your opponent's argument that as a matter of New York law, if she fails the examination, they simply could not have given her a waiver?
That's not New York law.
Oh.
6506 subdivision 5 says that you may waive examination requirements. That law came into effect in 1971, 5 weeks before she went forward.
But they say, if I remember the argument, is you may not do that for someone who has failed examination.
That's not so.
No.
It's not the law. If you can find it there, fine. But it's not the law of the state of New York.
Does it say specifically that you can waive the examination requirement?
Yes, 6506 subdivision 5. The Board of Regents shall supervise the admission to and the practice of the professions. In supervising, the Board of Regents may, discretionary, waive education, experience, and examination requirements, I editorialize in whole or in part, for a professional license prescribed in the article relating to the profession, provided the Board of Regents shall be satisfied that the requirement of such article have been substantially met. And we hold here before the Supreme Court of the United States.
They could waive the examination.
Yes.
They could waive the examination, couldn't they?
Examination requirements.
They could waive the whole examination.
Yes, sir.
You think that's what it means?
Yes.
You
counsel?
Have just made an analogy to the American tradition of hearings and said, as a hearing in this court, do you think you have a constitutional due process right to an oral argument and hearing in this court?
No, I don't. The only reason we're here is because the Board of Regents brought certiorari and you admitted us here.
Do they have any right? Does anyone have any right to an oral hearing in this court?
No, sir.
The majority, in some terms of our cases, are
vast majority
decided without oral argument. Are
they I agree, Your Honor.
What does that do to your claim that due process requires a hearing in your situation?
The Board of Regents, thankfully, is not the Supreme Court of the United States. The Board of Regents is an administrative agency. The Board of Regents should be close, very close, to the people to whom they're administering. They have the responsibility. The state of New York are handing out these licenses, and they should be cognizant and sensitive to giving them to people who have been proven proper practitioners for the long time that Mary Tamanio has proven that she's a worthwhile practitioner. And that's why I think that, you know, a hearing ought to have been granted to her.
Suppose they had a rule that after you'd taken the examination six times and failed, you could not take it any longer. And she failed six times, did she not?
And if they didn't have 6506 on the book, yeah, I'd say she's done. It's over. But 6506 gave her that other avenue that the legislature said that was open to her.
My hypothesis was that in addition to the existing statutes, there was a provision that five times was the limit, as some state licensing boards do have.
I think it's, I believe it to be constitutional. She would have had a due process, as long as there was nothing else on the books.
I take it your position is that you could have come here directly from the board. I mean, you could have gone into federal court under 1983 without ever going into the state courts at all.
Yes.
You could have gone and filed a suit under 1983 when your waiver was denied directly without ever...
I must say that we were so sure that the court would find that this arbitrary quick no based on the facts, you know, would never require us going to the federal court.
But the statute doesn't set any standards for the granting of the waiver, and none of the cases do they?
No, and that's one of the reasons we're here in the federal court now, because it's such a broad discretionary power. It says to the Board of Regents...
But what expectation under state law did you ever have that a waiver would be granted?
Well, we were really testing it. It was only on the books for 5 weeks. And we thought that Mary Tamanio had all the qualifications to show that she substantially complied. And I can recite them again. Her admission to other states. Passing a national.
My real question is, where do you find in state law any limits on the discretion of the board to deny your request for a waiver?
The ordinary
constitution. It sounds like it, but this might be a decision. It's just left to the complete discretion of the board.
It is left to the discretion of the board, but they must arrive at whatever decision they do in a constitutional manner. And we're submitting to you now that they did not arrive at it.
But if it's left to the complete discretion of the board, they can go either yes or no, and they will be wrong in neither event, I think.
Well, they will be wrong if their yes or their no is founded on a procedure that is unconstitutional. And that's why we're here. We'll say their procedure was unconstitutional because they gave no reasons. She had a property and a liberty she was taking to them.
But if there are no factors that they have to consider, what would they be hearing about?
They would be hearing her background, her qualifications, her long years of practice.
Which is what you say ought to entitle her to a waiver, but maybe the board just doesn't feel that any of those are relevant.
I would, if they did, then we would have lost there. But we were never given an opportunity, and the constitutional decisions have held that a person ought to be given this hearing or ought to be given the reasons before they come up with their yes or no. They come up with their no, like with a rubber stamp. They came up with their no based on hearing nothing.
Well, then your answer to Justice White's question must be that there are some standards in New York law, because otherwise there'd be no reason for them to come. Why they couldn't simply say no, it's a matter completely confided to our discretion, and we've decided not to grant it.
I believe the majority of the standards, and that's why there's a Civil Rights Act, are here in federal procedure, and they didn't follow them. Yes.
Before you finish, would you be good enough to make a comment or two on the statute of limitations here?
Yes.
It's hardly been mentioned in oral argument by either side, and you didn't cite Johnson against Railway Express Agency, which involved 1981 rather than 1983, but I wondered generally your approach to the statute of limitations.
I would submit that the cornerstone of statute of limitations is the concept of repose. Judge Foley in the district court told that statute of limitations, which in New York State was 3 years, believing that, number one, there were no witnesses to forget. There was no evidence to grow stale. There was only one issue, an issue of law. Mary Tamani, you hope, brought?
I want to know why it was told.
It was told in the interest of federalism, the concept that a case ought to be tried in the state court to its fullest before you ever come to the federal court. Federal court has an overcrowded calendar, particularly in civil rights cases.
A little while ago, didn't you indicate that you could have come directly into federal court?
Yes, I could. I chose. I had to make a choice, and I made my choice in the state court. And I did make my choice in the state court. If I were compelled to come to the federal court, and if I didn't know that statutes could be told, it would mean that a person would go into the state court with his state action and not come to the federal court. And in the middle of it, have to bring his action in the federal court. You'd have two cases going at once in New York and here, as the case before me. Or you would have a person not bringing his action at all if he had a civil rights matter and coming directly to the federal court and again congesting your calendar. Judge Foley told it and followed a policy of tolling so that a person could go safely to the state court, try to receive his remedies there without coming to the federal court.
And then we have that very situation in some EEOC cases.
Yes.
Precisely.
Right. And it is in the interest of in federalism that this kind of tolling takes place. And the other aspects of when they toll and when there is a statute of limitations, the court looks to whether or not the person was asleep at the switch, were they sleeping on their rights.
Well, she hadn't. I just suggested in the Johnson against Railway Express Agency, we reached the opposite conclusion.
And I didn't put in my notes the case that does come to a still different conclusion. I'm sorry. So the end of this, the due process, statute of limitations, the concept that we had a person who had this long practice, unblemished, who attempted to receive a waiver, which was granted and put on the books only 5 weeks before in the state of New York, was refused. We contend that refusal at that time was an adjudicative decision that demanded some kind of a hearing. Some kind of a hearing was not given.
No reasons were given. And we came to the federal court because we said this was an unconstitutional way to arrive at this decision. And we plead this court to accept our arguments. Thank you.
Do you have anything further, Mr. Meserve? You have 4 minutes remaining.
So much very quickly, a couple of things. The statute of limitations and res judicata arguments sort of are highlighted here by the fact that we are trying to remember what happened 9 years ago when the application for a waiver was made. The application was made upon 3 letters and supporting affidavits submitted by Mr. Mutare, which are in the record in the circuit court. He was permitted to submit whatever he wanted to. There was no cutoff at that time. There was no request for a further submission of any kind. Now, on the question of standards, on this waiver...
Are you saying, in effect, that there's nothing that was not before the board that could have been brought before the board except oral argument?
Yes.
They knew that she'd failed the examination 6 times. They knew that she had been in this activity for a good number of years.
Not too many at that time, 2 to 5, I think, but she's been going on. Yes, there was nothing else, and on what he submitted, the New York courts held it would have been an abuse of discretion to grant it. The statute was not intended to apply to that. Now, the statute does have standards built right into. Those words, substantially met, have a meaning. Almost passing an examination is not quite the same as substantially meeting an examination requirement in our interpretation. Somebody who takes an examination somewhere else, which may not be quite the same as ours, could be admitted under that provision on a determination that they substantially met the examination requirement. Somebody who almost passes an exam...
Board of Regents did have the authority to waive the examination requirement? If it determined
that the New Hampshire examination
was substantially the equivalent?
Right.
She argued that it was a substantial equivalent, which seems to me to suggest that you did have the authority, as a matter of New York law, to grant the waiver you say you didn't have the authority to grant.
We have the authority to waive an examination requirement if we believe it has substantially been met. We never believe that where the examination was a New York examination and was failed.
Well, but
we may believe that if an equivalent examination is taken somewhere else.
Well, she did take it. What she contended was an equivalent examination elsewhere, didn't she?
Yes, and that.
And you disagreed with her. But had you agreed with her, you would have had the authority, as a matter of New York law, to grant the waiver.
Yes.
So I think really your argument before that you had no authority as a matter of New York law really wasn't quite right.
I think it was right if you couple her failure and her out-of-state examination. If she came in with an out-of-state examination which was the equivalent to the New York examination, we had the authority to license her. If she had her...
Without requiring
a New York exam. We could accept the foreign exam, determining it to be substantially equivalent.
This would be a reciprocity type
yes.
of admission.
Yes.
And that's one of the things she argued you should have done in this case.
And she argued that in the state courts, and that was one of the issues which was specifically argued and determined against her in the state courts.
It was determined, as I understand the statement of reasons quoted at page 4 of your brief, on the ground that, as a matter of fact, you decided the exams were not substantially the equivalent of the New York exam.
Her foreign examination.
Right.
Yes.
But you would have had discretion to rule otherwise, is all I'm saying.
Yes.
All right.
On the statute of limitations and on the res judicata argument, the rule in the Second Circuit is contrary to the generally accepted rules, and we believe the interest of justice would require a uniform rule in that respect. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in the United States.